NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Dean Spiliotis from Southern New Hampshire University, sitting in for Laura Kanoi, and this is The Exchange. In the wee hours of yesterday morning, House and Senate budget negotiators finally reached a tentative agreement on a two-year state budget for New Hampshire, one that comes with a total price tag of $10.7 billion. Conspicuously absent from the deal was the expansion of Medicaid called for under President Obama's Affordable Care Act, much to the consternation of House Democrats and Governor Maggie Hassan. While the governor can at least take heart in the preservation of some of her key spending priorities for mental health and education, the budget also calls for $10 million worth of possible state personnel layoffs. New Hampshire now waits to see whether the House and Senate will approve the deal next week, and then it's on to Governor Hassan for her signature. In the meantime, a host of other issues are making news in New Hampshire, including medical marijuana, voter ID requirements, education tax credits, and yes, dodgeball is back. Today on The Exchange, it's the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. What are your biggest concerns with the budget agreement reached yesterday? How do you feel about the exclusion of Medicaid expansion? Do you think Governor Hassan should sign the medical marijuana legislation? Which New Hampshire news stories have you been following most closely this week? You can call into The Exchange. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post comments to our Facebook page. I have three veteran New Hampshire reporters joining me in the studio for today's news roundup. Norma Love is a senior statehouse reporter for the Associated Press. Norma, welcome back to the roundup.
Good morning, Dean.
Dan Tuohy, state editor for Patch.com. Patch is a New Hampshire news source with 12 websites in New Hampshire. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
And joining us today for the first time is Jeff Feingold, editor of New Hampshire Business Review, print and online editions. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
A lot going on this week, but the big story is obviously the budget agreement, especially the fate of Medicaid expansion. And we're going to talk all about what the House and Senate conferees decided. But let's start with you, Norma. Can we have your kind of overall assessment of the deal, the sort of key components, winners and losers? Did this end up being what both sides wanted?
Well, when you said dodgeball was back for a minute there, I thought you were talking about what we went through the other night.
Close to it, right?
Yeah, that and the bugs flying in the windows, which is, you know, sort of a rite of passage for some of us every 2 years. The budget's $10.7 billion for 2 years, and that's total spending. That's not the general fund spending is what they normally focus on, and that's from state taxes. I would say that it was a pretty well... Both sides won and lost. I mean, as you said at the top of the show, the governor didn't get everything she wanted. She wanted absolutely to have Medicaid expansion as an authorized part of that budget. It's not, but there's a path to it. But in terms of spending, you have Republicans and Democratic leaders saying this is a pretty good deal. So I don't really see much problem going through, even though the Senate went past their deadline by 30 minutes, which means they need a two-thirds vote on Wednesday to pass it. There's more money for the disabled. There's more money for mental health programs. The capital budget, which isn't part of this, but it's joined at the hip, has money for a new women's prison. You have in there charter schools. They funded four new charter schools, which the Republicans really wanted. The Democrats, they wanted it. It was interesting because some people said, well, the House lost. I don't see it that way because what the Senate did was they took what the House and the governor put together and they built on it, but they changed how it was funded. So the fight was really over revenues. The Senate didn't want, which is dominated by Republicans, didn't want tax increases. So they won there. There were no, the 20-cent cigarette tax increase that Maggie Hassan and the House had proposed didn't go through. But both sides agreed to let a 10-cent cigarette tax increase that was going to go into effect automatically in August go into effect. And it stems from the last session where they dropped it, but if revenues dropped, they were going to automatically raise it. So they kind of said, well, that's not a tax increase. I mean, it's semantics. The Senate really wanted to implement some business tax credits. The House and the governor said we could save $13 million by delaying them. They're not going to be delayed. But instead, what they did was they said, well, you know what? 13 came in a little better than we thought. It happens almost every 2 years. Revenues are a little stronger, so they recognize some more money that way. They did a few more tweaks around the edges, but overall, the spending is a fairly moderate budget. It includes more money for education, higher education, more money for community colleges, more money for the what they call the waiting list for people who are disabled, more money for mental health. And I don't think that it's going to have a problem. The problem might be in the trailer bill, which has some of the implementation aspects. They have bills put in there, but they were fairly conservative. We used to call that the last chopper out of Saigon because people would come running into these conference committees about midnight with a bill that got killed in another conference committee and tack it on. It didn't happen this time. I was really surprised.
Well, obviously, the one of the big issues going into this week was Medicaid expansion. They finally reached agreement on it late last night. Let's hear a little bit of sound from Democratic Representative Mary Jane Wallner talking about what the Democrats were willing to accept.
I do feel happy about that we were able to come to a date that we could agree on. We will have a study, and then we will go forward. And I believe the October 15th date will work, and I think we can put together a great committee that will do the work and will do the study. So I think that ended up, you know, not exactly the way I would have liked, but I think we came to a good compromise on that.
That's Democratic Representative Mary Jane Wallner talking about the compromise on Medicaid. Dan Toohey, tell us a little bit more about what went on here and what we have to look forward to in the fall with regard to Medicaid expansion.
Yes, well, so the House supported Medicaid expansion, of course. Governor Hassan supported Medicaid expansion. The Senate, with the 13-11 Republican edge, blocked the bill for Medicaid expansion. So this was the big elephant in the room for the budget talks. Now, they didn't go with Medicaid expansion as part of this budget deal. However, they have a commission to establish, really to study this and develop what they're calling a New Hampshire model for Medicaid expansion. And what that remains to be seen, well, you know, over the next 4 months, they will be debating this. So it's one of those issues that, in some respects, as Norma mentioned privately here, it's going to be a long summer for people who are studying this and advocating for Medicaid expansion, and those who have questions, you know, trying to get those questions answered. But this is part of that, you know, subset, subplot beneath the budget, which has been fascinating to watch. I mean, we see this in other states, of course, Arizona, the governor, Jan Brewer, a Republican, endorsed Medicaid expansion. You know, it's been hit or miss around the country.
So what's your sense, Dan, for kind of reading between the lines? Do you think this was simply the Senate Republicans wanted a little bit more time, or do you really think they're looking to scuttle this and this is just sort of a stalling tactic?
Well, we'll see. I think, you know, the Senate president's in this agreement to study or have a commission to study a New Hampshire model for Medicaid expansion, and they're being sincere. They want answers.
Jeff, why don't you jump in quickly?
Yeah, I just want to say I think first of all, I mean, October 15th is not that long a way off, but it is part of the continued legislative tradition we've seen over the many, many years, as Norma knows, of kicking things down the road and just kind of buying some time. I think that there are a couple of senators who I think surprised Democrats by not supporting Medicaid expansion right out of the box. And there's some political gamesmanship going on in that when it comes to that, and it's really interesting to see how this is working. It occurred to me yesterday that I would love to have seen what would have happened if the casino gambling bit that the governor obviously went all in on, made her centerpiece of her budget, were not so much the centerpiece and was kind of on the side, if she could have done some more negotiations, because that was something that obviously the Senate was very eager to have, and if she could have done some kind of negotiations on Medicaid expansion, but we won't know that.
One of the big issues in the budget, we know that Governor Hassan seemed happy with some of the priorities being preserved on education and mental health, but there is this issue of personnel cuts and the requirement that she cut $10 million in state personnel costs. And there's a debate about layoffs. Let's hear what Senator Republican Senator Chuck Morse had to say about this issue of layoffs.
As for layoffs and things like that, you know, I don't see that that's going to happen. I think when you add $400 million to the spend in the state of New Hampshire, there's money in this budget to effectively govern.
That's Republican Senator Chuck Morse talking about whether or not Governor Hassan will be forced to have personnel layoffs. Jeff, let's follow up with you on this issue. What do you think? Are we going to have layoffs?
I think that it's possible, but I think they're going to try their best not to. I think there's negotiations going on now with the State Employees Association, and maybe they could figure out some way in terms of health benefits. But the SCA seems to be a little hesitant about giving up their non-deductible—they don't pay deductibles on their insurance. I do think it's kind of playing. I know $10 million doesn't seem like a lot of money, but if there are layoffs, it's not a good thing for the New Hampshire economy. We'll probably be talking about this later, but you know our unemployment rate's high enough as it is, and to have some more government layoffs is not the best thing in terms of the state. So I think people will be going in this hoping not to lay people off, because that would be not a very good thing.
Norma, you want to jump in?
Well, I think there may not be as many layoffs as have been put out there when the deal was $50 million in overall spending and $20 million in general funds as a cut, and they cut that in half. It was estimated between 400 and 700 people could lose their jobs. They've cut a lot of the what they call vacant positions over the last few years, so there are not a lot of places to go. But when you have nearly 10,000 employees, there is a fair amount of attrition. So it's true that some of this could be handled through attrition. Some could be handled through retirements. It's an open question. I forgot to mention at the top of the show that there is another impact on potentially on layoffs, and that is Health and Human Services has to cut $7 million overall. It doesn't specifically say personnel as the $10 million. So that's $17 million, and they're a huge – they're like half the state budget. So I think there will be an impact. It's just not known. When Governor Lynch had to lay off – had to negotiate $25 million with SEA several budgets ago – and they tried to do furloughs, and they refused. The final number was about half what people estimated. They said, it'll be 500, and it was like 200.
Dan?
Yeah, I think it remains to be seen. I mean, the House and Senate, they return on Wednesday. Each chamber will vote on these conference reports, including any other outstanding legislation. So that'll wrap it up.
We have to take a brief break here. We're going to come back and continue talking about the budget. We've got a lot of other issues to talk about, including voter ID and medical marijuana. We'll take your calls and emails, so please stay with us.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And our job at NHPR is to bring to New Hampshire the most complete stories about New Hampshire, whether it's developing a new story or expanding the range of perspective of an ongoing story. You can help. Join our Public Insight Network and let us know which stories we should speak with you about. Find out more about PIN at nhpr.org. More of the New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. Then at 10, it's the Friday News Roundup on The Diane Rehm Show. Partly sunny today with high temperatures mid-70s to lower 80s. For tonight, partly cloudy, low temperatures in the 50s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Franklin Pierce University, a leader in adult education, offering a Bachelor of Science in Management. New term begins soon. Information at franklinpierce.edu. And Mascoma Savings Bank, serving the people in need of the Upper Connecticut River Valley since 1899. Online at mascomabank.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis. Today on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, the top stories that Granite Staters are talking about this week. We invite you to join us. You can call in at 1-800-892-6477 or send us a short email to theexchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And I'm joined by three veteran New Hampshire reporters today. We have Norma Love from the Associated Press, Dan Tuohy from Patch.com, and Jeff Feingold from New Hampshire Business Review. And I want to start with an email in this segment. Brian emails us, and he's talking about this money, this $16 million of earmarked funds for innovative renewable energy projects that is being taken away and put into other programs like LCHIP, which is the Land and Heritage Conservation Fund. Jeff, could you say a few words about that for us?
That's money that comes from the REGI program, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and over the years the state has gotten quite a bit of money from that, and it, actually more than they thought they were going to get. So it's been piling up in size over the years, over the last year or so. And it was pretty obvious from the very beginning that the legislature was not going to be able to leave that money just sitting there when, especially as the days, the weeks through the budget process went on, when it was obvious that the Senate was not going to accept any kind of tax hikes. So they found this pot of money, and apparently you're taking $16 million from the money that this is money that's supposed to go towards renewable energy projects, like funding people who put certain solar energy systems on their houses, or businesses that do renewable energy projects. So they're taking a part of that money and putting it into the LCHIP program, which is for the most part a conservation program, but whether you could argue that it has anything to do with renewable energy is another matter entirely.
Now, we've had a couple of these wind projects that have stalled recently. Do either of my other guests here have anything to say about just sort of renewable energy in general and kind of the governor's approach to renewable energy?
Well, I think I'm not sure this money goes directly into LCHIP. I think what they did was they just grabbed it. There's money that, as you pointed out, that was piling up in a renewable energy fund, and it's a time-honored tradition at the State House when they get into budget crunch time to go raid what they call dedicated funds.
So this is not indicative of some bigger policy shift by House?
No, it's not. It's a matter of they needed to balance the books for 13, the year we're in, and there was at one point an argument that Hassan was going to be given authority to go raid a number of dedicated funds. And by dedicated funds, I mean taxes can come into the general pot or they can be earmarked to a specific purpose. And if that specific purpose has a little fund and it starts to build up, they sweep them. And this is what they did. They went in and they took the money and they put it into balance 13.
The classic example was the tobacco settlement money. I mean, that, you know, I don't know what the final tally was and how much of that, you know, that several hundreds of millions of dollars was, I don't know how much of it was used for stop smoking programs.
We have no money, state money, going to tobacco programs. We have some federal money, I think. But, yeah. I mean, the state took the money
just
and
used
they
it
used
for
it
purposes.
For other purposes.
But your general sense, Dan, perhaps you could take this. Governor Hassan, you think she should be happy with kind of the preservation of her spending priorities in the budget?
I think so for some of these. Again, this budget was just consecrated, if you will, a couple of hours ago. And we look at what's in this budget and what's not in it. She did support LCHIP, as I think she mentioned it in her budget speech as well. You know, as Norma mentioned earlier, I think there's a lot of – the House got some things they wanted. The Senate got some things they wanted. I think each of the three branches here, or three components here, have some wins, and they have some things that they'd like to work on.
The LCHIP fund is fully restored. I mean, the House and the governor took money and diverted money out of the fund, and the Senate said if we're going to be charging a fee to support this, the money should go to the program. And they fell firm on that in a couple instances, and LCHIP was one of them. So they will be getting more money.
Let's shift gears here now. We got a lot of issues to talk about. Voter ID. This is something that there had been attempts by Democrats to roll back a stricter voter ID requirement passed under the O'Brien legislature. And it looked like this was going to – that Democratic attempts to roll this back basically had failed. We got a last-minute sort of mini compromise in some aspects of it. Dan, talk a little bit about how they finally compromised.
I'm sorry, Dan, as far as what?
The voter ID, the student IDs and the
– Sure. So they was the phase two was they were going to move that forward. So essentially they're keeping some student IDs in place, and I believe it's until 2015. And so at some point they're giving a window in which student IDs can have an expiration date on them. So, you know, young people when they vote can still vote. So it was one of those compromise deals coming forward.
I'm sorry, but probably the case that Democrats will bring this back up again?
I think the Democrats are happy because what they didn't want was a list of IDs that were used in the current election to vanish. And there was a lot less flexibility in the law that took effect in the second phase, which would take effect in September. And what this compromise does is it restores not only the ability of students from certified New Hampshire colleges and high schools who are of age to vote at the polls. Their IDs can be expired if the expiration date isn't longer than 5 years ago. They also moved out a provision that people didn't like that said if you don't have a photo ID, we're going to take your picture at the polls. And this was also a cost to the state and to clerks to have to take pictures. So that's moved off to 2015, and we'll see if it comes in then, because it adds another element of delay.
Yeah, there's another aspect of this that's interesting, because I live in a small town, and you know, you go to the polls and you know all the ballot clerks, and they ask to see your ID. But now apparently, if the moderator knows who you are, they can kind of vouch for you and say, "Well, yeah, you can vote without showing the ID."
If I don't want that, I can challenge you, but that's okay.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah.
Probably not the end of it, though. Probably Democrats will try to do this again next.
It's a national issue for, right. for the Republican Party, so it's something that's going to be around for a while.
Absolutely. Another big issue in the news this week. It looks like we're finally going to get medical marijuana. This is something that the House had passed repeatedly, and Governor Lynch had opposed. Governor Hassan has said that she would be in favor of it under certain circumstances. Dan, did she get her circumstances?
She did, yeah. She says she will sign this into law when it reaches her desk. What the House did in the House and Senate conferees, the House essentially agreed to the Senate position on this, which does not have a home grow option. So the House version, really, they wanted a qualified person to have up to 3 mature plants on their property. The Senate, hearing the governor's concerns, rejected that portion of the bill, a couple months back, and again under the guise that, look, we need to get something passed. It's better this than have nothing. So in New Hampshire, here we are looking at becoming the 19th state to have some form of medical marijuana.
I think it's 18 states in the District of Columbia. What, Dan, you mentioned this concern about the homegrown option. What was the concern in Governor Hassan's mind about the homegrown option?
Well, law enforcement did express some concerns as well. I think it was a matter of policing and regulation. This is a state bill. It's in some respects, of course, at odds with the federal government.
It's ironic because when Hassan was a state senator, she voted for both the dispensary model, which is what they're going to be voting on Wednesday, and the home grow option, but not combined in one bill, which is what this came to the Senate as from the House. The argument was that there are people who are very ill now, maybe who are terminally ill, who would have no access legally for some time, may die before the dispensaries could be set up and running.
So the compromise is that they're gonna get the get it in place quickly enough so that people can get it if they need it without actually growing it. Jeff, do you want to jump in at all?
Well, I just find it interesting that the governor, as Norma said, had a more liberal approach towards or open-minded approach to the home grow. But something happens when you become governor. Governor Lynch was obviously very much against this. That's why there hadn't been passed earlier.
So you think this was largely a political move by her to get it through?
It's some kind of calculus going on there. I think it's very interesting that when she became governor, she kind of modified her views on that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, just – I mean, some reps and senators this week mentioned the same thing. Like, once we get this approved and – we get it set up, we can improve upon the state law once it's in place and as this moves forward. So when this does become law, if it does become law, you'll see this being fine-tuned within the next session.
Now, the House has, I think, for a number of years now passed decriminalization. That seems to go nowhere. Will this have any impact? Do any of you think this will have any impact on kind of overall decrim in New Hampshire? You're all shaking your heads. Norma,
no,
you want to jump in?
I think you've got two different issues. The issue here is that there is a very small subset of the population that is either very seriously chronically ill and no medications seem to relieve their pain. Or their ability to eat, or they're terminally ill and they need something to relieve suffering. There's a sympathy for that. I don't think there's a sympathy for people who want to just smoke marijuana.
Dan, you don't see it happen. Oh, Jeff, you jump in.
Well, I was going to say that I think in some other states there have been, they've had medical marijuana laws and then it's led to decriminalization. So it's possible. There is a core of New Hampshire residents who do earnestly believe in decriminalization. They have for many, many years been very active. And, there's that libertarian streak in New Hampshire voters that, you never know. I wouldn't rule it out entirely.
Dan, do you know, has Governor Hassan taken a position on decriminalization?
Wow, I don't know. Norma?
She's opposed.
Norma,
she's opposed? I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I think as far as decriminalization, because it's marijuana and they seem like they're joined at the hip, but it is a separate issue altogether, and law enforcement has much greater or similar and greater concerns with decrim.
Other big issue that we've talked about on the round table for months now is this education tax credit policy, in which corporations can make donations to private scholarship funds, and that money can then – they get tax breaks, and that money is then used to send students to private school, parochial school, homeschool, et cetera. Democrats have called this a voucher program. Republicans have called it school choice. We had a – there was a lawsuit. We have a Superior Court decision saying that that there's sort of a you can do some of it's unconstitutional and some of it's not. Jeff, can you talk about this for us a little bit?
Well, yeah, it's been in effect since beginning of the year, and it was challenged just immediately by the ACLU and some others. A judge in Stafford County ruled that it was unconstitutional when it came to the aspect of the state basically allowing these credits to be go to towards religious institutions, and from what I've read about the decision, I did not read the decision. It's pretty clear that the judge ruled that this was state money that would have been going to the state, but because it wasn't it was being diverted to religious institutions, so therefore that makes it unconstitutional.
And that's been the big argument, right?
And that was
the
argument.
It's not state money. It is state money. It's not state money.
That was the argument by people who were opposed to the credits, but the people who support the credits said, no, it's not state money because it's money that it's from the businesses. So, but the bottom line is this is just an interim ruling. We have to wait for the Supreme Court to weigh in on this. It does seem like it looks possible that that's pretty much what the Supreme Court will support, but we're not going to know. So,
just sort of to be clear, the decision said that the money you can't use the money for religious schools, but you can use it for homeschooling.
For homeschooling.
Do you know why that is? That's an interesting.
Well,
in my mind, that's an interesting.
That's because of the argument on the separation of church and state. You know, saying the government money cannot go to a religious institution.
So homeschooling is not considered
right.
Homeschooling
now.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's not a matter of homeschoolers can come to public schools and take part, limitedly or however much that they can negotiate on terms of sports and other activities.
Dan?
That's, Jeff nailed it as far as the trial court, ruling that it's unconstitutional in that it violates, according to Judge Lewis, the no aid clause, using those tax dollars to be granted or applied to religious schools or religious sects. Now, I think even Bill Duncan, who was a very prominent vocal critic of this ed tax credit, was saying that it didn't address the program at whole, the education tax credit as a whole. Yeah. It's just on these religious schools. And even one of the sponsors of that bill, DJ Betancourt, was remarking to me that, it's kind of a mixed result as far as that lower court ruling. And we'll wait to find out what the New Hampshire Supreme Court has to say on this.
Do any of you have a sense of how – Norma, you can follow, but do any of you have a sense of how big of an issue this is? I mean, this is something where nationally vouchers are – it's a very kind of intense debate, but this isn't something necessarily that you hear about a lot in New Hampshire.
Well, let's go back to the money. I haven't checked recently, but not that long ago, not that many businesses had contributed. There are other tax credits that businesses can take advantage of for community redevelopment or something. You help the Capitol Theater or something. And you can visually see as a business, I helped and my name is on this. It's much harder if you're going to contribute to an organization that's going to create a scholarship and you don't know where that's going. I think it's more philosophical. There are some businesses that philosophically supported it and financially supported it, but it wasn't a great deal of money. The last time I checked, I think it was only $100,000, $200,000.
Very low six figures, I guess you could argue that this whole controversy about it has kept businesses from taking part, but I still think it's only a certain select few businesses that were even interested in the first place.
But pretty for sure it's going to go to the Supreme Court in the state. Right?
Well, from what the proponents of the credit are saying, yes, they seem very eager to keep going on this.
And I think that one of the things that seemed to be driving it was the religious side. I mean, there are a number of religious schools. I imagine that these scholarships would help pay tuition far more than a St. Paul's in Concord or someplace which has very high tuition.
Let's go back to the budget for a brief moment here. The capital budget. Maybe, Norma, you could talk about this. So within the big budget, there's this capital budget. One of the big items in there, the women's prison, that's been something that's been debated for years now. What did they decide?
Well, it's ironic that they've been putting it in the budget for a number of years, but it didn't stick until there was a lawsuit. That the women's prison in Goffstown, which is state leases facilities, is not adequate, that they don't have room for programs that at one time, many years ago, industrial arts was, I think it was sewing or knitting or something, which doesn't help really retrain women who need to come out of prison and go into the workforce. So the gist of the budget was that unless there's some other reason, they would put this behind the men's prison in Concord with room for transitional facilities. And putting it in Concord by the men's prison allows them to share some facilities. So, you know, the men leave, the women come in, whatever. And it's been a long time coming. It's $38 million. It's, I think, a 224-bed prison with room to expand.
Mm-hmm. Let me just say before we continue that we're talking about the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today on The Exchange. You can call in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can email us at nhpr.org. Please keep those emails short. And you can also post on our Facebook page. And Jeff, on the same issue, let me ask you, so the larger issue here, this has really been driven by court cases and kind of the idea of providing equal rehabilitative services for men and women. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the way it is. And I just wanted to mention that one of the interesting things about it is that this is a state-run prison. It's not going to be taken over by a private corporation or anything, which had been a debate over the last few years, especially in terms of the state opening up new prisons. This is not going to be one of those for-profit companies running it. So,
yeah. Dan?
There's so much in the capital budget, and like many things, all this came together really in the past week, but they've been working on this for some of these priorities for years, including, you know, some of the state funding match for a $25 million federal grant for replacement of the Sarah Mildred Long Bridge in Portsmouth, which is one of the bridges that connects Portsmouth to Kittery, Maine. So that's a major economic priority for New Hampshire and Maine.
And they're going to put some money in there to repair the seawall on the coast.
Yeah. I think some liquor stores, too.
Yes, there's some liquor stores. I mean,
$10 million for credit card processing
and
liquor stores.
And there's money in there for, you know, to other kinds of improvements at the community colleges system. University system gets a little bit of money this time. They don't get the $100 million they got in the past. I think it's more like $8 million.
We got to take one more break. When we come back, we're going to keep talking about the Friday News Roundup. We got some new unemployment numbers. We've got the Taser incident in Concord, and Dodgeball is back. So please stay with us.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Lexus CT Hybrid with a combined EPA rated 42 mpg. Actual mileage will vary. Lexus.com/CT. And from Institute for Lifelong Education at Dartmouth Summer Lecture Series, The Digital Revolution, starting July 10th. Information at dartmouth.edu/ILEAD. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
It's a busy, busy time of day for people as they're getting ready to get out of the house, get in the car, and get to work.
And while you're worried about all of that, NHPR's Rick Ganley has got you covered.
You know, we have a commitment to in-depth news coverage. We want to give you some news, weather information, maybe a sports score, something that is really relevant to you as you are starting your day.
Start your day right with Morning Edition on NHPR and NHPR.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis. Monday on The Exchange, we're talking with Marion Nestle, an author of a recently re-released book on food politics. Join us Monday morning live at 9. Today, it's our Friday News, New Hampshire News Roundup. You can join in the conversation by calling us at 1-800-892-6477 or email us at nhpr.org. That was a rally in Concord this week in which anti-gun supporters came into direct contact with pro-gun supporters, and it got quite heated, and it ended in a very high-profile tasering incident by police in Concord. Today on The Exchange, it is the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and again, you can call in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR, and email us at nhpr.org. So let's talk about that tasering incident. It's precisely the kind of thing that, because of YouTube, becomes viral almost immediately. Dan, can you tell us what happened?
Yes, Dean. Well, first, the gun rally. It was mayors against illegal guns. They were reading a major stop outside the Statehouse Plaza with a big bus painted and blazed at No More Names, reading some of the 6,000 gun violence victims. And you had some important, very prominent people like John Canton of Manchester, whose daughter was killed by an estranged husband. A shot, and John Canton himself took a bullet as well. But it turned rowdy, to think of a better word, when other gun advocates showed up, and there was almost two counter rallies going back and forth, as you can tell from that clip. People shouting out and shouting down people, including a gentleman who interrupted John Canton. He went back. Police officers were called, and they arrested this individual for disorderly conduct, including I think one or two accounts of simple assault, and he was tasered. And of course, we had many news outlets had that on tape or videotape. It was really the tape did go up viral, so it really kind of really entrenched both of these groups, the people that want more gun control, including raising attention to Kelly Ayotte's vote a couple months back against one of those bills for background checks. And, gun advocates were saying, look, we don't need any additional gun control.
Now, Jeff, what's interesting to me about this is you have this national gun group, Mayor Bloomberg's Mayors Against Illegal Guns. But the sort of pro-gun rally, the counter rally, was actually programmed by Jack Kimball, who's a sort of a well-known Tea Party advocate in the state, the Granite State Patriots. Can you say a little bit more about kind of the dynamic, national versus
former
local?
Former chairman of the Republican Party.
And ran for office at one point
as well. For a short
time, right?
Yeah. I think it's interesting because this is something that's playing out all over the country, and it comes to New Hampshire, and New Hampshire's been having this debate now since Newtown, but even before that, and it always strikes me is that when the issue of gun control comes up in New Hampshire, there's this knee jerk reaction to it, the federal background checks. Argument, because the Second Amendment is sacred to many people, but when you have a situation where someone's trying to exercise his First Amendment rights, like Mr. Canton, and that's something that isn't as important or didn't seem as important to this man who didn't want to let Mr. Canton continue speaking, but it's an interesting situation in New Hampshire. There's a very strong gun culture. But I do believe that New Hampshire has been changing over the last 25, 30 years, and I think there's a population here that's growing that's not as much involved with use of guns. They don't hunt and do all the stuff that.
So kind of in contrast to the traditional notion of our kind of pro-gun libertarian culture.
I think if you do, I mean, New Hampshire has become it's becoming a different state. You look at the election results and it's becoming a different state.
It'd be interesting to see the demographics on that. I mean, I think Jeff's hit on something there it's a very emotional issue and passions run extremely high. I've seen it inside the State House when we have votes on bills where anything to restrict Second Amendment rights fills the Reps Hall, which has 400 seating plus a gallery. We had the debate during the last session over whether to allow guns in the State House, and the Democrats, when they took over the House, tried to roll that back, but the Republicans didn't want to do it. But they instead put in a rule that says you can't have them on the House floor. I don't know how well they police it, but it was a symbolic gesture that, we had a civil discourse here. Do you really need to bring in your gun? Whereas other people are saying, you can't stop me from having my constitutional rights. And so I think that clip just really illustrates the passions.
Dan. Yeah, well said, Norma. The other question I had is like, what does this do? Does it move the needle, so to speak, for people who are trying to promote gun control or for gun advocates or gun rights Second Amendment folks who want to, you know, protect what they have. I'm not sure that it does. I think the two factions are just really entrenched. The emotions are certainly flaring up. But one other footnote on the rally was one of the names, Red, was one of the Boston Marathon bombers who was killed in a gunfight.
Right.
And that
caused
really,
some consternation among some people.
It did. There'd be an editor involved in that list.
Yeah, and you know, Mayors Against Illegal Guns, they were rather prompt with an apology, saying, you know, we obviously it was a mistake, and they apologized for it, but it's still it really people that were there
and people jumped on that. It was very prominent in the union leader yesterday. They made had a big story about that.
Do any of you know if this is something that Governor Hassan kind of views as something that the state should be involved in, or is she more kind of hands off, this is a federal issue? I haven't heard her talk a lot about it.
I don't believe that you'll find anything coming out of her office that supports legislation on gun control like this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next thing I want to talk about here, these unemployment numbers are out. We always look forward every month. The New Hampshire numbers always come out, I think, a week or two after the national numbers. Jeff, let me turn to you. We were in April. We were at 5.5% here, and I think 7.5 or 7.6% nationally. What do we find out recently?
Well, looking forward to the numbers is not necessarily what we've been doing lately.
Depends on which party you belong to, right?
It's down. It's now 5.3% in. It was 5.3% in May, and it's still stubbornly staying in the mid 5% range, which historically for New Hampshire over certainly the last 25 to 30 years is high. I mean, it's lower than the national rate, pretty substantially, but. In terms of where New Hampshire has been historically, we're used to 2-3%. 4% is a high unemployment rate for New Hampshire. Over the last several decades, it's going in the right direction in one way. But when you look at it over the year, in May 2012 it was 5.3%. So we haven't really made any progress, and there are some disturbing aspects of it, like manufacturing employment's not. Which is a very, very important sector for New Hampshire employment in terms of not just in providing the jobs, but being high-paying, good, really good jobs. That's just not moving anywhere. It's mostly in services, retail, and in some very other service sectors. The economy is still kind of sluggish, and New Hampshire has been, for many years, the standout economy in New England, and it isn't anymore. Vermont has a much lower rate. Massachusetts, and there are some things about the New Hampshire economy that need to be addressed, or we need to be start thinking about that have not been looked at.
That's very interesting, because for the last couple of years we've always sort of taken comfort in the fact that New Hampshire is a little bit lower than the federal but national, but you're saying, well, it's not exactly what it seems. Yeah, Norma.
Well, during the discussions over what our revenues would be to pay for the state budget, they, of course, bring in economists and to hear what they have to say. One of the things that stood out was that New Hampshire no longer leads New England out. And this was, I think, came as a kind of a shock to people that we are not the engine that we once were. And one of the reasons I think they put more money into aid to higher education, which was severely cut in the last budget, because they believe that by boosting the community colleges and by boosting the university system, that they'll produce the workers that will help re-energize our economy.
One of the arguments for expanding Medicaid is that in many communities, the hospitals are, if actually most of the communities they're in, are the largest employers by far. And if you expand Medicaid, that would bring in hundreds of million dollars into the hospitals that they don't have now. That means that you're talking about hiring doctors, nurses, technicians, and other people, and those are also very good jobs.
Plus, you'll have healthier workers,
and you'll have healthier workers, and also just the whole idea of taking some of the burden off of some employers, because their employees could now get health care, whether or not legitimate health care that's being paid for. And it's an interesting part of the debate. It'll be interesting to see what happens during while this commission does the studying.
I think that the money that they put to higher ed, I mean, Hassan didn't get the money that she wanted for the university system. They cut $12 million out of their budget in the House, and the Senate went along with that figure. And the university system said, oh, I don't know if we'll be able to keep our deal not to raise tuition, which is an issue in driving kids out that they want to keep in. And I don't know. We'll have to see if the university system can live with what it gets.
And Dan, let me turn to you. Another thing in the news today, something we've all talked about for a long time, the Hooksett tolls, the two big liquor stores on the side of I-93 in Hooksett have finally gotten the go-ahead from the executive council, I believe unanimously, for a multi-million dollar renovation, very restaurant, gas pumps, et cetera. Say a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Governor Hassan and the executive council approved that contract this past Wednesday. It's a $32 million project to improve the welcome centers in Hooksett, just north of the Hooksett tolls. And it sounds like it's something like if we've driven that, you know, I-93 before, every one of us has probably wished we had something like this before, whether it's a filling station or, you know, a store or a deli or, you know, it's a significant project that will be begin this fall and possibly be or likely be completed in 2015.
Yeah, it's going to be done by the people who own the Common Man Restaurants, which is, you know, a familiar New Hampshire chain of restaurants,
and that was actually secret for a while. I remember everybody was waiting to see who the vendor was going to be.
And which is nice to see actually in terms of that it's a New Hampshire company doing it, and it's their strat. If anyone's followed the Common Man, it's pretty obvious that the Hooksett restaurant would be perfect for them because most of their restaurants were built along I-93. So
right,
this is perfect.
Right, you've ever seen the map? They're all right up and down
the right
highway. Yeah, we have a Republican representative back in the news again this week, Stella Tremblay, who has made some inflammatory or incendiary comments about the Boston Marathon bombing, has resigned now. Norma, can you bring us up to date on this?
Yeah, she sent a letter to the House clerks resigning. I guess moving out of her district in Auburn. She drew flack because she said she thought that the Boston bombings were a black ops operation by the government, and she had some. She wasn't sure that one of the victims was sincere. I mean, it was a picture of being pushed in a wheelchair, and was he really in pain? Because she would have been in shock, and you know everybody reacts differently. But I think that. She said she's sure that leadership will be happy that she leaves, and certainly there were harsh words from members of her own party. But she, in the letter, she goes on for three pages to talk about her philosophy of liberty. I think it's mostly a libertarian philosophy that the government is not being carefully watched, the mainstream media is not doing its job, we are not looking at the kinds of activities government is doing that is infringing on citizens' rights. And that is a voice we've been hearing more and more in the State House, certainly last session when Bill O'Brien was Speaker and he had what he called a redress of grievances committee, and people would come in with grievances that they felt the courts didn't answer properly. And that committee has been disbanded under the Democrats because they don't feel that that's the House's role, that that's a role for the system to handle. And I think she's a voice saying the system isn't handling everything. We need to challenge that, and I'm a victim of speaking up against that system.
Jeff, are you surprised that she threw in the towel here?
No, apparently she had another round of emails to legislators just a day or so earlier where she reiterated her feelings on this, and I think that was pretty much the last straw, I would think, for the Republican leadership. I could just imagine Gene right. Chandler, the minority leader. I you have to feel for him.
Well, the email system has been used by—
No, I understand, but my point is that it came to light what she did, and it was just another straw on the camel's back when it came to dealing with some what most people would call outrageous beliefs on things.
And Dan, the party chair Jennifer Horne basically said good riddance yesterday. Yeah.
She did, absolutely, and Gene Chandler did too with some very colorful language. I think it's one of those things.
Well, we're just about out of time. I'd like to take a few moments here since we now kind of are at the end of the legislative cycle just to kind of get from each of you a sense of what you expect to see next week and then a little bit kind of looking forward to the fall and what you think is going to kind of come back up either in the fall or even into January in the next session. So, Norma, let me start with you.
Well, next week I'll be certainly dealing on Wednesday with the passing of the budget and the companion bill to the budget and voter ID and some marijuana, some of the other bills that have to be finalized. But the big issue going forward is going to be the Medicaid expansion in this commission and its report by October 15th. And Hassan indicated yesterday that if the Senate President and House Speaker didn't call a special session, she would.
Dan?
Medicaid expansion, Dean. You know, they have supporters of this saying that New Hampshire stands to have lose $2.5 billion on the table. And so this is going to be a hot topic for months now.
Do you buy into the idea that we're going to get a special session in the fall, or do you think Republicans are going to figure out how to kind of kick it down the road a little bit?
That's what it looks like. I mean, Governor Hassan has said she remains optimistic.
And Jeff?
Yeah, if they do decide to kick it down a little further, that really is problematic in terms of getting Medicaid expanded. There's a desire to get it done by January 1st, and even with an October 15th deadline for this commission, it's still – raises some issues about whether this actually could be done in time, even for next year at all. And that's a concern by people, certainly, in the healthcare industry.
Well, we are out of time, but I should say real briefly, as I said in my opening, that the Wyndham School Board has voted unanimously to restore a modified version of dodgeball. Do any of you big dodgeball players growing up? I know I was.
Well, I'll tell you, my deal with dodgeball is that when I was in junior high school, I was one of the kids who was trying to hide behind the stands because they always put the kids who were the strongest and the fastest throwing the balls against all the other kids, and it still brings chills up my spine.
Dodgeball memories?
Many years ago.
Dan, have you ever played dodgeball?
Oh, sure. Good fun.
Yeah, it was
with Coach B.
Right, it was a big part of my childhood with those heavy rubber kickballs that would leave you a nice welt. Well, we are out of time. I think we're all going to be watching next week to see if the House and Senate votes on the budget. It sounds like Governor Hassan will sign it. I'd like to thank all of my guests for a wonderfully interesting roundtable today. Norma Love, Norma, thanks for joining us as always. I'm sure I will see you back here again shortly.
Thank you.
That's Norma Love. She's senior state house reporter for the Associated Press. And Dan, as always, great to have you with us.
Thank you, Dean.
That's Dan Toohey, state editor for Patch.com. Patch is a New Hampshire news source with 12 websites in New Hampshire. And Jeff, we've talked before, but it's great to have you here as part of the roundtable as well. Thanks for joining
us.
Thanks. Yeah, Jeff Feingold is editor of New Hampshire Business Review's print and online editions. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Tim Camerato. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Dean Spiliotis from Southern New Hampshire University, sitting in for Laura Canoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with the author of a book who says the food choices we make aren't just personal, they have political ramifications as well. Then we get the latest on Lyme disease, including the often passionate debate over how best to treat it. And with vacation season underway, we look at the best reads of the season with our annual summer book show. Join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
The domestic hour of the Friday News Roundup on the